In the run-up to the Cheltenham Festival, you'll be aware that there are dozens of big race previews. Apologies. Hello, this is Cornelius Lysett, with the latest episode of the Cornelius Cast. Yeah, there are these previews that take place, and I often seem to do one for some friends who've got a restaurant pub not far from Uttoxeter, a place called the Duncombe Arms, a village called Elliston in Derbyshire. Great place. When I've done these previews, there's always been quite often been another pundit there with, dare I say, plenty to say. And annoyingly, he's quite often been right. I say he's a pundit, but one year he was also a jockey doing a bit of wheeler-dealering as well. Another year, a sports commentator doing a bit of wheeler-dealering. Another year, an assistant trainer doing a bit of buying and selling of horses again. And another, a point-to-point trainer doing more buying and selling. Now I find out that he's putting his money where his not inconsiderable mouth is and has become a fully fledged trainer. So I can give a Cornelius Cast hello and welcome to, I think, Britain's newest professional racehorse trainer, Ollie Pimlott. How was that for an intro?
Very flattering, Cornelius. You must have somebody else that you've met on these preview nights, I think. It certainly wasn't me.
I think it's not unfair to say you've had plenty to say, but I did point out that you're very often, rather annoyingly, you've turned out to be right.
Yeah, I would have quite a strong hand on the form, but not as strong as I certainly used to do. But I would take a keen interest in the form book.
And now you're a proper trainer. What a time to start. When I texted you this week and said, are you Britain's newest trainer? You said, well, that may be true, but also probably the maddest.
Yeah, stupidest. I think brave. A lot of people have said to me, I've been very, very brave in getting the license now, but it's something that I've wanted to do for quite a while. I think I'm doing something very unique, which has not been done before.
This is in terms of your use of data to work everything out.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to this as we go on. But yeah, to surmise, basically from the buying of the horses to the running of the horses, I'm going to use data and statistical analysis in the training, the running style, the buying. Everything is going to be run and has been running since August time using numbers.
So, well, yeah, as you say, we're going to come on to this whole data thing. There is a technical term. I've looked it up. It's called money, a Moneyball system, isn't it?
A Moneyball system is similar to what I'm doing. Moneyball originated in baseball.
Yeah.
Where teams with a lot less money than the New York Yankees, for instance, they tried to find value players who were not well regarded by other teams, and sell on players which were highly regarded by other teams, but in fact had a higher value than what they were worth. And this has actually made its way into football now. Matthew Benham, who owns Matchbook, the sports betting exchange, he owns Brentford.
Brentford, yeah.
Yeah, and Mithailand, and they use that system. And of course, at Brighton and Hove Albion, a very famous gambler owns them, and they're doing the same thing. So
that's Tony Bloom who owns Brighton, isn't it?
Tony Bloom, yeah. So it is slowly making its way into sport, but it is quite beyond me that it hasn't made its way into racing yet.
So Moneyball relates to a book written by a guy called Michael Lewis, and it relates even more to the Oakland Athletics baseball team. Billy Bean.
That's him, yeah.
Was the magic person who was played. There was a film, wasn't there? Brad Pitt, I think, played him.
Brad Pitt played him, yeah.
So it's A, using data, and B, using data to find athletes, or players, in your case, four-legged athletes, equines, who are underrated by others, but because of your data analysis, you think you've got a chance?
Yeah, I mean, to give an example, from start to finish, we bought a horse called Love Your Work at Ascot last year.
Right.
The trainer at the time was operating at 4%. He was running over a variety of trips, 7 furlongs to a mile, 2 mile, 3, and we thought he was a 7 furlong, a mile max horse. We bought him 10 grand and got him home. And the way I use the statistical analysis, easy for me to say, is through heart rates. Every time a horse works, their resting heart rate is taken, then their max heart rate is measured as they gallop. And then we get the time from when they've pulled up to back to their resting heart rate. And that can give you a very good indication of their fitness. Also take the stride cadence, which is a relatively new thing. It's just creeping into the sales.
You're going to have to explain what that is.
A stride cadence is basically the amount of times strides a horse takes. in a certain period of time. So a sprinter, for instance, is going to take a lot more strides, but shorter strides than a 3 mile chaser, whose stride length is going to be bigger, but obviously not as often. But
right.
You're going to get a freak like Frankl, whose stride cadence is extremely high, but he also has a really high stride length. But they're obviously few and far between.
So he ends up being one of the horses, great horses of all time. So let's just go back. Love your work, you mentioned. So what made you think that the distance that he'd been racing over a variety of distances. So did you pick this horse because you'd used data to analyse him, or was that initially just an impression that you'd gained?
Well, we did use data as well, because he ran a massive speed figure at Newcastle on his last run, where basically he ran away with a jockey for the first 4.5 furlongs and still managed to finish 4th or 5th. And as you know, other people will know, making the running at Newcastle over a mile at the time was near enough impossible.
Right.
We'll come to this a little bit later, but I'm hugely into the stuff like wind. So we'll walk the track and we'll get the wind off the websites and stuff like that.
What, direction or speed or both?
All of it. For instance, at Newcastle, if the wind is directly in your face, it is still impossible to make the running and win. Whereas sometimes it can be directly behind you, and if it can go the other way, you can get free on the front end and they won't get to you. Equally, again at Newcastle, another example, it can come straight across you, so you want to get cover. I use a Norwegian website to get all this stuff off, and every time we have a runner, even if it's on the all weather, we'll walk the track. Just for a marginal gain, basically.
So you've got a runner at, I don't know, Catterick Bridge. So you would find a weather app which would tell you something about what's going on. That would be part of your whole build up, would it?
Yeah, the best one is a Norwegian website,
right?
And that is, I found, the most reliable in terms of weather, wind direction, all that sort of thing.
So you think, or you believe that the wind being behind you as opposed to in front of you, left to right, you know, all these things, that they all matter?
I think they matter hugely. I think this, we've seen it in cycling, is a very good example of this. If you think to the Tour de France, the team leader isn't at the front. He's got all the domestiques looking after him. He's in the middle of the pack. They're trying to keep all the wind off him so he doesn't use as much energy. And that's the same with horses. If you're tracking a horse in the slipstream, you're not using as much energy as one who's out in front with the wind straight in his face.
So you can use a peloton principle?
I think so, yeah. I think that there's a lot of crossovers between cycling and horse racing in terms of the marginal gains that you can gain from it. Strava's a big thing I use, which a lot of cyclists use.
So what is it? Just explain what that is. I don't really know what that means.
Strava is an app,
right?
That you can use on your phone. It's like directly on your phone. And for instance, when we gallop a horse, we'll set the Strava off just before they set off. It will give you your miles per hour. It will give you your furlong per furlong speed. And it'll tell you things like, through my time at William Hill and stuff like that, I've always been amazed that people don't ask after a race what the time is. You know, after Usain Bolt has run the 100 metres, the first thing people say is, what was his time?
Right.
But after a horse race, how often do you say, well, that was a really impressive performance? Nobody says, well, what was his time? And I think time is a huge thing. Massively into speed figures and things like that. But if you watch a piece of work and you're at the top of a 6 furlong gallop,
right,
and you can barely see the first 2 furlongs, on the Strava you can see, for instance, what speed they've gone per furlong. So if they've come flying by you and you think, my God, that was a really good bit of work, but then you just look on the phone on the app and they've actually gone really steady for the first 3 furlongs and sprint home, it's probably not that good a bit of work. They've been flattered by the way they've come home. Equally, they could go really quick at the start and they could finish legless. You think, what's gone on there? Well, the jockeys have gone too quick at the start and they finished in the heat. And this is all in a number. I am a numbers person.
Right.
I like to see fact, and that is fact. You know, from looking at your app on your phone, it tells you about everything you need. I've got an app that tells you heart rate, stride cadence, furlong per furlong speed, you name it, we have it. And that is all collected after every piece of work. I put that on a database on my laptop so I can look back on the first piece of work a horse did to the 5th piece, the 6th piece, the 7th piece. You can go back and compare them.
And so just how does it actually work? You've got your app that you can look, and is there some kind of a chip, or is there some kind of what?
No, just got software on the phone that's downloaded, and it's all on there.
Really? Right.
Just to make it a little bit more clear, with the Love Your Work thing,
yeah,
we got the horse, and doing not hard pieces of work, he had an extremely high heart rate.
Okay.
Which indicated this horse was not fit, because his heart rate was extremely high for just, you know, for me would be a pretty regulation canter. So we upped his work, put him on more food, and within 2 or 3 weeks, when he was doing exactly the same work, his heart rate had lowered and he was getting fitter. When trainers get horses and they say it's not fit, they know it's not fit, but I knew it was not fit through the data telling me. I had pure fact that this horse is not fit. 2 weeks later, it was doing the same thing, and it hadn't reached its max heart rate doing exactly the same work, because I could see on my phone it had done exactly the same work two weeks ago, and yet its heart rate was 30 beats lower. So that is how you could improve a horse through fitness, and we saw it through fat within week 2, 3, and 4.
And whereas most racehorse, and you worked in racing stables, you worked for some of the top trainers around, you worked for David O'Mara, just trying to think who else you worked for. Somebody in France. Who did you work for?
Francois Cotin.
Who else? What other trainers you work for?
I worked for John Quinn for a number of years. Nigel Tink for a lot of Northern trainers.
And were any of them? They're not data driven. They are instinct driven. Are they?
Yeah, instincts and eye. To be fair, David O'Mara does use Strava, but very occasionally.
Right. So why not? Well, I suppose you're saying your system is unique. So what you're predicting, are you, that more people are going to get into this in the future?
I think 100%. If you look at the Breeze Up sales, it's coming into that more and more.
So how does that work? So literally just see how quick a horse went up the gallop.
Yeah, a horse goes on the Roly Mile. They obviously breeze before the sale. Mm. You can watch this breeze on the Tattersall's website. And the, I think it's another thing we could come to, racing politics, but the breeze up times are not made official. But if you look not very hard, you can find them. And the breeze up times will tell you the furlong per furlong, how quick they've gone. A lot of the boys as well will measure stride cadence. So talking about the stride cadence again, that will give you an indication as to what trip the horse wants. They don't do heart rates yet, but I think there is talk that might come in as well. So all this technology is starting to creep into racing, especially at the sales.
And the cadence thing, is that all part of your same app?
Yeah, it gives you cadence as well. And coming back to Love Your Work, his stride cadence when it was measured when he was working was that akin of a 7 furlong mile horse, which was what we thought, but it was told in fact by what we were seeing on the app.
So you can still have your instincts and still have your impressions, but this data just backs it all up. Or do you solely use the data?
I solely use it, to be fair. Obviously, right. You use your eye, but I would solely rely on it because I deal in fact. Some people disagree with it. Some people, I believe it's the future. I think we've had good success from using it since August time. And I like to see fact. I like to see numbers. I like to see confirmation with what I'm seeing with my eye in a number.
So you're looking at heart rates, you're looking at the weight of the horse as well, aren't you?
Weight of the horse, not so much. I would prefer a heart rate.
Right.
Because a weight of a horse can, you know, for a two-year-old to a three-year-old, for instance, they can put a lot of weight on just through growth.
Right.
An older horse, it would stay similar, but I prefer heart rate. I do weigh horses, but not very often.
And just in terms of this cadence thing I'm interested in, so a horse could have been running over a certain distance, let's say a mile and a half, but you can actually look at it and consider the data and actually say that is just the wrong distance. Look at the measure that. This is what we should be doing.
Yeah, and that is all available to quite a number of tracks now on the At The Races website. So this is becoming more and more available to your average punter.
Yeah, so that's taking it a step further, isn't it? You're doing it for training, but actually punters, more and more punters could be doing it. And you also look at the data for the race courses themselves. So when you've been assistant trainer to Tim Fitzgerald of late, so when those horses that the team sent off to the races, the data for the actual race course itself is pretty important to you as well, isn't it, in terms of tactics?
In terms of tactics, yeah, we would have the last six runs of every horse written down in terms of the form. We'll then compile a pace map as to what we think is going to go forward, what's going to be held up, etc. Then we'll bring in draw bias, what's a good draw, what's a bad draw. And then following that, we'll think about how our horse needs to be ridden. For instance, at Wolverhampton during the winter, a mile six furlongs,
right,
it was impossible to make the running and win. I think it was about 1 or 2%. So if you had a front runner there, which we did at the time, we held it up because the data was telling us what the horse usually does, it was very difficult to do.
But presumably, and the alternative to that is just not to run.
Yeah, or not. Yeah, or look elsewhere. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Now that I find that fascinating. So, and you say you're a numbers person. I see you did a law degree, so there are not many numbers involved in law, or not in a law degree anyway. But you also work for William Hill, not as a bookmaker, but as a media person.
Yeah, I did do that. Well, I did the presenting and punditry, and that's where sort of numbers came from. I was terrible at maths at school, but odds always interested me, and that's where the love of numbers comes from: speed figures, draw bias, pace maps, doing things in a factual way, I think is the most profitable way about going punting. And I know a lot of successful punters, a lot of people do it in different ways, but I think the most successful ones rely on things like time. They concentrate over a specific distance and they keep themselves to a certain number of races, for instance, seven furlong handicaps or stuff like that.
So you weren't good at maths, but you knew the difference between 11 to 8 and 6 to 4.
I did, yeah. I did.
And still do, I guess. A smile on your face when you hear those odds.
Yeah.
So you love your work. I see has won two races and been second in a race this year.
Yeah. He won his first two races for us in the space of 3 days. And then he finished second on his third run for us in the Stewards Inquiry. I thought we might nick it, actually, in the Stewards Inquiry, but it wasn't to be. And he's had two runs this year on turf. To be fair, the handicapper put him up £9 on turf without running, and he's just not been very well handicapped.
So he's had one run. Is it one run on turf?
He actually ran about half an hour ago.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
How did he get on?
He ran okay, but
he's a bit high on the handicap, is he?
Yeah, I think the handicap has still got quite a few pounds in front of him at the minute.
So did he run under your name or still under Tim Fitzgerald's name?
My name will be a couple of weeks' time. It's in the process currently.
Right. So when are you thinking you might have your first runner?
I was actually hoping it would have been this Wednesday when we did have a winner, but given the furlough process at the minute at the BHA, they are behind on a number of things, including licensing. But I think it'll be within the next couple of weeks.
Right. And what are you thinking? What was the horse that won? Was it Go Well Spicy that won it?
Go Well Spicy, yeah.
So will that be one of your early early players for under your own name?
All of the horses in Tim's name will just come into mine.
Right. So how many horses will you be starting off with, do you think?
I think we'll have about 22-ish.
Right. Oh, well, that's, 22, nice and precise. Well, yeah. But this is at... Will you be based in Tim Fitzgerald's places in Malton? So you'll be training from there?
From the same place we are at the minute.
And it's before your time, but we're talking about a legendary place to be training because his dad, Jimmy Fitzgerald, trained from there and trained some of the great horses of the 70s, 80s and 90s. So there's plenty of successful heritage.
Yeah, and the gallops are... We've got 2.5 furlong round gallop and Malton, Langton Wall gallops, and Tim has his own gallop are within... 3-4 minute box drive, so all the facilities are there for what we need to use.
So what, they'll go... Oh, this is probably another tangent, but so they won't be walked to the gallops, they'll be...
Again, 5, 10, 15 years ago, all the horses that people use would have walked to the gallops and back, but now with the sheer number of horses and lack of staff in racing, I think that Brian Ellison would walk his... And John Quinn occasionally, but no one else really.
Right, and that is purely a logistical thing with in relation to staff, is it?
I think staff and sheer number of horses. Yeah, well, number of horses and lack of staff.
So, if you've got 22 horses, do you have to go back and forward? Back, how many can you take at a time?
Oh, we take 4 or 5 at a time.
Right.
But some horses are doing different things on different days.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a gallop at the yard as well. So. one day horses will be on the round, the next they'll be galloping, day after they might have a day off after they've galloped, etc.
Right. I'm really, you know, I know you've worked for stables and you've been thinking about this for years and years, but you sound very confident, makes it sound a bit unfair, but you sound very well organized, you know, very well organized, very, very ordered in your mind about how it's all working, etc. or going to work.
Yeah, I think I've got a method. It's been proved to work in 6 months, and I think you've got to stick by the method. There is going to be times where you're going to scratch your head a little bit and think, "Am I doing the right thing here?" But I believe, truly believe, this is the way, the future of the way horses will be trained. Every other major sport, this is data, is how they're run now. Dare I say data? I think Boris used that quite a little bit, didn't he? Saying he'd be guided by the data, and that's not worked out particularly well.
Yeah, but at least you're dealing with something a bit more predictable than a virus.
Yeah. So I think you've just got to stick to your guns. Sometimes I'll say to a jockey, come five wide round the bend, and they'll look to me like I've got two or three heads, and it might go wrong. And often it does go wrong.
So why would you say, use that as an example? Why? So you're talking about five horses' widths wide. So what data would have told you to do that?
Well, especially on the all weather, Lingfield and Wolverhampton during the winter were riding extremely slowly on the inside. It was basically a slop. If you went up the inside, it was very, very slow. It paid to come late and fast on the outside, at Lingfield especially. And that's what I think Go Well Spicy won in December time. And that's what I think won her the race. She came five wide and Dougie Costello just got her up on the line. But I think the winner, the eventual second, was right on the inside, on the slowest part of the track.
So the traditional thought, you want to stick to the inside because obviously it's shorter, that isn't always actually an advantage, if the underfoot conditions aren't suitable.
Yeah, and that's why I think walking the courses is so significant. You don't see many horses or jockeys or trainers walking courses. But again, if you think like a cross-country race, if you're a runner, you're not going to run, even though it's right up the inside on the muddiest part of the track, even though you're going to go a bit further, you're going to go on the bit that's nice and flat and firmer and easier footing. You're not going to go right on the inside because you're going to use, even though you're going less distance, you're going to use more energy.
And does it, how often does it work? You know, how often does what the data tells you actually end up working, and how often doesn't it work?
Obviously, there are times where it can make a bit of a fool of you. You can be very sure of something and the horses, it can go wrong. Sometimes you can take a gamble as well. If you're pretty confident that if you go up the standside rail, there's a bias because you've walked the track and you're the only one to go there and you end up tailed off, you look a bit of a fool and the owner's asking some questions. But it's worth the gamble. I think that stuff like that is a gamble worth taking. If you don't try something, how do you know? And it might get you a significant edge. And we keep talking about these, but I think marginal gains through data, if it gained me one more winner a year, I think it would be, it's all worth doing.
So, and what do you, what proportion do you think it has and hasn't worked in the time that you've been using this particular method?
I think it's given us three more winners than what we should have had.
Right. And how many winners have you had?
We've had six from 22.
Right. Right. And that is because you analysed everything from the stride cadence to the race course, to the wind, to everything. You think that gave you that advantage?
Yeah, I keep talking about it, but marginal gains, Cornelius, everything is amalgamated together. They all work together and they all come to the end of the puzzle, which is the race. And that's what I think the race is. The race is there as a puzzle. If you're a gambler, the race is a puzzle and your job is to solve it. So that's why a lot of gamblers will do the same thing in terms of our race planning. They'll go through every runner. They'll have a pace map. They'll have a draw bias. They'll try and predict how the race is going to be run. And that's effectively what I've got to do as a trainer in placing the horse.
And you've got a racing heritage. Your brother's involved in not training horses, but in racing. Your dad, Chris Pimlott, was a very well-known jockey of yesteryear. So you should be doing things traditionally, really, shouldn't you? Did you have a sort of a moment, a eureka moment, where you thought, gosh, I've been doing this wrong?
Not really, but I've always been very interested in sports science, the way things are trained. Look at Leeds United's boss, Marcelo Bielsa. I don't remember if you remember the Spygate, and he invited all the journalists to his interview.
Oh, yeah.
And he reeled off 3 hours of stats on every single thing about Derby. I mean, he knew what they ate for breakfast. You know, they knew absolutely everything about Derby. And I think if you go through every leaf and tick it off, I think you can go to the races thinking, knowing that you've done your job, nothing's been left to chance. And then, you know, what happens, happens.
So that was the Spygate. That was when Frank Lampard was at Derby, wasn't it?
At Derby, yeah.
And was there quite a hoo-ha? There was
a big hoo-ha because they said he was trying to get an unfair advantage by sending someone to watch Derby's training. So Bielsa invited about 20 or 30 members of the media to Leeds United's training ground, and he basically gave them a lesson in coaching. In 3 hours, they reeled off data after data after data on every single thing you could think of on Derby County, just trying to prove a point that he didn't actually need to see them train. It was just one minor thing that he might have gained something out of.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. I've just found a quote here from we talked about Billy Beane, the guy, the baseball guy. He said, "There's so much data that you can predict individual player performances and the odds that certain strategies will pay off. The maths work." That's effectively what you're saying, isn't it? The maths work. If I sit down and weigh up all the different ingredients, then and that's what your man at Leeds United was thinking as well.
Yeah, I say I'm probably not doing anything different to my next door neighbour in terms of training the horses. They go up the gallops at the same time. They probably go up at the same speed, but he doesn't know that the horse is sick because its heart rate is extremely high for what the work it's just done. Or he doesn't know as a fact that he's just got a horse off a new trainer. It's hit its max heart rate, only doing, you know, a steady canter. It's not very fit. He might know that by looking at it, but he hasn't got it in fact that that is the case.
And it was this type of detail when Martin Pipe really got going, what was he, 15, 16 times champion jumps trainer. And he used to analyse all the bloods way back in the 1980s. And everybody thought that he was some kind of, well, not everybody. There were those who thought he was some kind of a wizard or whatever because he was doing things differently. Also, interval training. And I suppose that was revolutionary then. And you see this as revolutionary and something that could be, you hope to be at the forefront of a movement now.
Yeah, I think I've got to market myself as somebody coming into the training ranks in probably what is the worst time since World War II. I've maybe got to market myself something a little bit different. I'm not doing it because I want to market myself, but I think it's a marketable thing what I am doing. It's not going to appeal to everyone. And I still want horses, people to go to the races as owners and really enjoy themselves because that is why they have the horses. I think if you go into British horse racing ownership thinking you're going to make some money, you're very sadly mistaken, especially with the current prize money situation. So we want to give owners enjoyment. We want to give them all the thrill of racehorse ownership. But equally, I want to do best for my owners. And hopefully, with what I'm doing, I'm giving the horse and the owners the best chance of a bit of success.
And presumably, if the owner says, "Can I have a fiver on this today?" you're in a stronger position. You know, funny things still happen, which you're never going to be able to predict. But you're in perhaps a stronger position to say, "Well, I think we ought to have a go."
Yeah, correct. I mean, horses, you hear the word morning glory, and that is true. We had a sprinter who was running very, very quick sectionals. It went first time and couldn't have it beat, and he got well beat, and he just doesn't show it on the track. So what you can see in the morning, again, you can see it with your eye, you can see it on the numbers. For whatever reason, they don't replicate it. Maybe they're feeling an injury or whatever. So it can lead you down the garden path a little bit, but I think more often than not, keep talking about the method. If you stick to your method, I think more often than not, you're going to come out the right side.
So here we are, summer 2020. Here you are starting this with your own name. You've obviously been involved for a bit, but with your own name, etc. You're sounding, as I said, very well ordered, very well organised. Deep down, is it nervous anticipation? Are you excited? Are you, you know, what's your view of the weeks, the months, the years ahead?
I think excited more than anything. I'm in a very fortunate position in that not many people can start out with as many horses as I have and horses who are of good quality. So I'm in a very fortunate position. That way I've got some good owners behind me and I'm hugely ambitious. Within middle of next year, I want 50 plus horses. That's what I want to do, and I want to become, if possible, the biggest multi-purpose trainer in the north. That is what I want to be. I make no bones about it. I am very ambitious, and that's what I want to do. But it's going to take a hell of a lot of hard work. But yeah, I'm just excited more than anything.
So your first target, obviously, is to get a runner on the race card with your own name. And then what are the targets? You've mentioned 50 horses next year, perhaps being one of the bigger trainers on the Northern Circuit. These type of ambitions are all things that are running through your head.
Yeah, 100%. And I think down south, we've seen the likes of George Bowie, James Ferguson, Tom Clover, young lads doing really well. And I think there's nobody up north. I suppose the likes of Ben Haslam, Becky Menzies, there's some young trainers about, but not many. And I think there is a little bit of a niche for somebody young and ambitious who wants to do well. And hopefully that might be me.
Flat and jumping? Jumping and flat?
Yeah, I think probably 70-30 in favour of the flat. Obviously, I come from a jumping background, love the jumps. But I think economically, it's very difficult to justify because the horses don't run very often. The injury rate is extremely high. And the owners don't get many days out, whereas if you've got a flat horse during the summer, it may run 10 times. Sprinter, you can run it every week. You're going to get a bit of prize money back, whereas a jumper could get a leg and you've lost the horse for a year.
And I'm guessing data works better on the flat, doesn't it? Because there are less imponderables.
There is less imponderables. It's especially good on the all weather because you know what the racing surface is. Obviously, sometimes the surface is going to ride quicker or slower dependent on the weather. But again, it can vary from day to day, race to race. Jockeys do tend to be sheep. If one person goes the far side and wins in one race, you'll see the next race, the whole of them will go the far side, even though it might have just been a bit of a fluke.
Hmm. Well, I'm really thanks very much indeed for talking to us today. I found that really interesting. I didn't know what cadence meant before today. I'd never heard of the expression Moneyball. I'm going to go and watch a movie, actually, see if I can find that on on Netflix. Well, look, thanks. Best of luck with everything, Ollie. Will you be, Oliver Pimlott, Moulton on the race card, will you?
I would have thought so, yeah.
Excellent. Well, look, thanks to you for joining us and best of luck with everything. And thanks to you as well for listening to the Cornelius Cast. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And whether it's a brickbat or something a little bit nicer, do feel free to leave a review as well. We'll chat again soon.